Yeah, this is Bob Brundage again. The date is still November the 16th, 1996. And now we're talking to the other half of this square dance weekend. And here in Mystic, Connecticut. And we're talking today to Cliff Broder and his lovely wife. And we're about to get into where you were brought up and so forth. I know your folks were both square dancers. And we knew them even before we knew you, Cliff. So tell us about where you were born and brought up and your experiences in the past.
I was born in Hartford, Connecticut, and lived in Hartford for 2 years, and then moved to Windsor, Connecticut, where I went to high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived there for 18 years. The last 28 years, I've been in Pittsfield, Mass., and I met my wife, Senta, at the Square Dance Convention in 1967 in Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Okay.
And we've been together ever since.
There you go. So, 1957?
1967.
67, right. Yeah, I was thinking, I didn't think you'd been married quite that long. But be that as it may. So, I know your folks were into square dancing when you were growing up, so tell us a little bit about that.
My dad was a program chairman for a club in Connecticut, the Windsor Old Towners. And what he used to do was bring traveling callers from all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Mitchell, Bob Yerington, Bob Fisk, Ed right. Gilmore. And a lot of callers came to our house, and it made an impression on me growing up that that's what I wanted to do for a living.
Okay. I must have known your folks. I really can't say that I remember them, but I must have known them.
Yeah.
We're all in it together back in those days, right? So then when did you get into, were you any kind of a musical background in your family?
I started, my grandfather played in the Shrine Band.
All right.
He played a flute. And I come from, my great-great-grandfather had a cornet band in Merrimack, New Hampshire, where he came down from Canada. There was no work in the woolen mills. And they started the Broder Cornet Band in the 1880s, and they played throughout New England with a prompter back in those days. That's
right.
What they had.
Let me see that. Admiring this little, today we call it a flyer, a brochure about the Broder's Cornet Band will give a promenade, concert, and dance. Merrimack Hall, Friday evening, April 22nd, 1881. And the prompter is Bella S. Keniston. Tickets are 50 cents.
Wow.
And there's a piece of memorabilia, that's for sure. So how did you graduate into this? You started dancing, obviously.
I started dancing at a teenage club like a lot of the callers did, myself and Jack O'Leary from Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And our parents would let us go, and then we took up square dancing. We were so enthused by what we saw. We saw these large crowds and these traveling callers coming to the dances, and they were driving Cadillacs and doing really well back then.
There you go.
And I thought, boy, this is the only thing I ever wanted to do for a living since right. I was like 13 years old.
Yeah.
And
so how did you get from that into calling then?
I went to school for caller school in 1965 with Al Brundage, who my mom and dad danced with at the Greater Hartford Club.
Right.
And Earl Johnson, and they gave me the foundation. And what happened was, Tony DiCarlo, who was a caller from Meriden, Connecticut,
mm-hmm.
had a nervous breakdown, and all of a sudden I had a club, and I was calling to 20 squares every other Saturday night in Meriden, Connecticut, and I couldn't even get people back with their partner. I really didn't know anything about it, but
right.
I had these huge crowds,
yeah.
and I had to kind of learn every other week
okay.
because those people would be there.
Right. Well, that was quite an experience for you, and you certainly polished your program a little bit since then. I was just watching you call this morning and 20 squares on the floor, and seeing everybody seemed to be moving around. You got everybody back home again. Yeah. Just keep in mind, somebody told me one time, don't forget that a singing call is one great big zero.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Anyway. All right, so tell us about some of the big events that you've been involved in. I know you're involved in cleaning... Tumbling Weeds.
I started as my first start in the square dancing. I was a music supervisor for the Parks Department.
Okay.
Started working with children for 4 years on the playground.
Uh-huh.
And I would take my guitar and I would go to these 21 parks and do sing-alongs.
Okay.
Back when I was a teenager, and then I got into the square dancing and I started doing. Festivals, started traveling south in 1970. My first festival was the Winston-Salem Festival with Harry Lackey down south.
Okay.
And we boarded a train and went down and did the Piedmont Festival with Harry in the Easter days.
Mm-hmm.
And I had did a lot of festivals on the East Coast from 1970 through 1986. Mm-hmm. Philadelphia, Baltimore, a lot of the big ones.
Right. Atlantic Convention?
I didn't go to that one.
Okay.
But, still in high school in 1967.
Oh, sure. Okay. All right. Then, how about national square dance conventions?
Been to the national in Baltimore. Enjoyed that immensely. I got the experience to go and call in front of 400 squares, and
right.
I was very nervous.
Can't understand that. But, and how about Caller Lab? You've been in that?
I'm a member of Caller Lab. I do a lot of things in my own area more than outside of my area. We're involved in promoting floats and promoting a lot of what I call commercial work.
Yes.
I've just finished doing a big project for the Norman Rockwell Museum.
Okay.
In Stockbridge.
Yes. Just below Pittsfield.
Excuse me. We also just finished doing a show at the Jacob's Pillow, which is a very famous dance theater.
Mm-hmm.
Been doing a lot of commercial work outside of the square dance movement very strongly in the last few years.
I want to get into that because you have a very interesting program. I'd like to know more about it. But what about, you mentioned some of the people that you've been associated with. After Caller School, and you got involved in a lot of big festivals and so forth. Some of these have made some kind of an impression on you over the years, and tell us about any of those that come to your mind at the moment.
Well, I worked with your brother, Al Brundage.
Okay.
Quite a bit. Now, Al really gave me the incentive and a role to start out in this business.
Yeah. Okay. And, when did you hook up with this guy, Red Bates?
I used to watch Red when I was 15 years old. My dad used to book him.
Uh-huh.
And Red became my idol. I mean, all Red right. was my idol, and John Hendren.
Yeah. Okay.
Today I work mostly with Red. We do 4 or 5 weekends together a year.
Good.
And become very close friends.
Right. Well, that's great. So, what about hobbies?
Hobbies?
Outside of calling square dancing.
I like to walk, cross-country ski.
Okay.
Mostly outdoors things.
Good. Okay.
Climbing.
So, now, you've had a little bit of help along the way with a very charming young lady sitting here named Cynthia. And what's your impression about square dancing, Cynthia? What your life growing up to this day?
I have a great impression about square dancing. I think it is a wonderful, wonderful activity. There are times that I get kind of disinterested in the activity itself, but on the other hand, I wouldn't really know what to do without it.
Right.
Because of the people and how wide it is, where you can go anywhere in the world and meet friends that you've never met
right.
all of a sudden. I do. I think it's a wonderful activity.
Right. You've probably been involved in a lot of the clerical things to do with the business, too. Registrations for weekends and probably making the coffee at the club and this and that and the other thing. Is that right?
Well, very involved in that
yeah,
part.
I'm sure. Right. So
weekends and paperwork, bookwork.
Right.
I never booked his date for him, though. I can't say I never did. I did when he was in the service.
Yeah.
I had the poor guy travel with his butt all over the world for nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. And how long have you been married now?
We've been married, it'll be 29 years in January.
That's great.
And we've raised up three wonderful children with the activity.
Right.
I work the school bus driver and I support all our benefits and insurances.
Right.
Which helps out, I say, and makes a living.
Yeah, right. You got that right. Okay. Now, you remember you were sitting here when I talked with Red, and I'd be interested in what do you find appealing about square dance calling?
Well, the thing I enjoy is anything that you could. I really enjoy square dance calling, and I think it's a wonderful thing that you can make a living at something you enjoy.
Right.
And I've made my living my whole life on square dancing.
Yes.
I enjoy the people. I enjoy meeting friends all over the East Coast and people from all over the world and sharing cultural experiences
right.
with those people.
One of the things that you've been telling me about during lunch, you've had considerable experience with people from other countries coming here, and you are an entanglement. Just tell us a little about that.
I've been working for the Jonas Foundation in Red Hook, New York,
okay.
with Pete Seeger. Pete's an international folk singer.
Right.
And what we do is we basically go there, and these children come and meet each other for the first time during the summer, and they all intermingle and share their cultural
right.
experiences together. And I've been doing that for several years with Pete. And also, recently I just finished working with the American Russian Youth Orchestra
okay.
in Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a real experience because they had never seen square dancing. And we put the Americans together and we did the Virginia Reel.
Okay.
And they had a great experience with
yeah.
it. Also, the Chinese from Taiwan, we did a program for a Chinese cultural camp up in the Berkshires where they've never seen square dancing.
Right.
The rhythms are a little different over in Asia.
Sure.
And just to see the smiles on their faces
right.
was wonderful.
That's part of the appeal, right? Yeah. Okay. You have a very unique approach to square dancing in the future, and certainly in the present also. We've talked about this, and I've said to you on more than one occasion, I think you're on the right road. Tell us about what it is that you're doing looking ahead to the future now.
I think that I'm concerned about the present activity as it is today with the length of the lessons. When my folks got in, it was 11 weeks.
Right.
And we used to have large classes, as Red stated. Today I see myself doing more and more one-night stands,
yeah.
Getting hired by communities that want to just dance once a month
right.
and do the community dance program.
Right.
They don't want a lot of material. They just want to be able to come and say, let's square dance. All dance is taught.
Yeah.
And you basically go in there and you entertain a bunch of people that have never danced
yeah.
and give them a good time. And my career is growing very rapidly outside modern day square dancing today.
Right.
It's resorts, it's children's camps, it's wedding parties and live music.
Right.
It's almost reverting back, Bob, to where It was a few years back.
Right. Quite a few years. Quite a few years back. Right. Well, you're also working with live music most of the time when you're doing this, right?
I work with live music probably once or twice a week in the summertime.
Yeah. And so do you do some of these things with recordings then?
I do a few things with recordings. Most of the things I do in the summer are live music with banjos and hammer dulcimers.
Mm-hmm.
And the excitement and enthusiasm that you can create with three-part harmony,
mm-hmm.
and say with a banjo, take the lead, or a hammer dulcimer, take the lead, or mm-hmm. guitar man, the enthusiasm with a band is tremendous.
Right. So you're obviously doing a very limited basic program when you're using. How far do you go with a program like that? Ladies Chain?
I do Ladies Chain, Star Left, the old Texas Star.
Yeah.
Star Promenade, Grand Square.
Yeah.
I like Grand Square because I can do a lot of instrumental leads. I'll say,
okay.
Side-face banjo man.
Yeah.
And the banjo comes in, and then the dulcimer comes in, the guitar comes in.
Right. That's great.
And it's wonderful. I got interested in live music because of people like Red, who had a band, and Al, who had a band.
Right.
And I felt like coming in the 60s, I did not have that experience that Red and Al had in the activity.
Right.
And I wanted to somehow go back and try to capture what I had missed.
Right. You also have a very unique approach to square dancing. In the form of this huge book here, you call it your sales presentation. In that are quite a few pictures that are nice memorabilia, but tell us a little bit about this book and what you actually do with it.
What this book is, what I do is, a lot of times for bookings today, I have to go to country clubs, to caterers, to camps, to organizations, and rather have them call me on the phone. With this book, I create a demand for people to hire me. A lot of people don't know what I do.
Yeah.
And by showing them this, or inviting them to come see us perform live,
right.
The greatest sales pitch is a bunch of people smiling and clapping their hands with
right.
enthusiasm that you can create.
Yeah.
And I go in and I show them these different pages. A lot of these things I've done with Red.
Yeah. Okay.
There's pictures of Pete Seeger in here. Pete was another one of my idols.
Right.
Talk about Pete
mm-hmm.
Seeger. Pete Seeger actually played a lot of the children's camps that I do today when he was blacklisted in the McCarthy era.
Yes, right.
He was up playing camps because he couldn't go on TV.
Right.
And Pete has been also one of my idols. I don't follow his politics, but I follow him as a musician.
Right.
And his ability to excite a crowd.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of your inspiration came from Pete Seeger, your inspiration as far as how he knows how to move a crowd that's supposed to have always been inspired through that.
Right.
He can move a crowd even today at the age of, what,
78 years old. He just did a concert
yeah.
with us, and he had 900 people.
Yeah.
They were in the tent, and they were singing Where Have All the Flowers Gone, and If I Had a Hammer. He hit the stage and it was just a mystical legend.
Right.
People just stood there in awe and they sang and
yeah.
it was magic.
He hardly had voice left, but he had these people sitting right in the palms of his hands.
Yeah. Well, that's really a unique approach, that's for sure.
Wanted to just show you this, but one of my first letters to Pete was he asked me to come down and do some Clearwater festivals, and he says, P.S., give our best to Al Brundage.
There you go.
And there I have that letter. That's the first Pete Seeger letter I ever got with a leaf on it.
Okay.
And, of course, Pete played banjo with Al.
Yeah.
And that was my introduction to Pete Seeger because I knew Al.
Right.
And then we developed a friendship.
Yeah.
Through Al Brundage,
your
brother.
Well, that was certainly a very interesting approach to square dancing, and as I mentioned before, I encourage you to keep up this, because I think this may be the trend that we're heading for eventually, and I hope some of the other national leaders around the country will get the message one of these days. But so all of your, you do follow the community dance program as prescribed by Color Lab, and a lot of effort went into that, obviously, to get it going. Do you agree pretty much with the basics that are used?
I think it's a great program.
Yeah.
And I think what we have to do with square dancing is we have to bring it back to the general public.
Right.
I think it's got too complex, too hard.
Right.
Too many lifts. We just got to be able to take the public and bring them in for a night of entertainment and say all dance is taught.
Yeah.
And then give them a good taste of dancing and enthusiasm when they go home.
Right.
At night they had a good time doing square dancing.
Yeah.
And I think again it goes back to using the music, the feel of the music.
Mm-hmm.
But I learned years ago when I heard the callers like Al and yourself and Earl Johnson and Red. These callers call with a rhythm. The callers, some of the callers today, I think they have a different style, which makes me feel a little bit old compared to what I do. But
right.
What do you think, Brett? Say something. Your conversation.
No, that's I'll agree with you on that. And the emphasis today is too much on choreography, you're saying, right? And not as much on sociability and like it used to be.
I think sociability is really important where people, square dancers, they don't care what you do for a living.
Mm-hmm.
If you're working with a person that's a sanitation engineer or you're working with a lawyer or a doctor, there's no class distinction. At a
right.
square dance, everybody's just really nice to each other and they
yeah.
can get away. And as one of my friends, that's a very successful cancer doctor, said, he said, I don't have to be anybody, I can just be myself. And
right.
I said, that is a wonderful thing about
right.
square dancing. They don't care who I am or where I've been.
Right. Well, I've said many times over the years that I've known dancers for years and years and years, never knew what their religion is, and never knew what their politics are, never knew what jobs they have, and so forth. You get to know a guy and his wife, and they eventually get to know their kids and like that. And it's really wonderful, no doubt about it. And you're such a good example of that. But, we talked earlier, not on tape, about costume. Give us your thoughts on that, you and Santa Bolt. And Jenny should get in on this. But,
I believe, and basically when we were discussing it earlier with Jimmy really inspired me to get into the prairie skirt.
Okay.
It's something that I basically wanted to do because I've done many years in costume, but working with the public is something I do. I certainly could go into the public as a leader with these full, funny-looking dresses.
Mm-hmm.
And the prairie skirt I feel much more comfortable with. It encourages the public eye a lot more than the original square dance dress does. But Jimmy, as a younger, newer dancer in the activity, I've known her for 5 years, and she's been new, has encouraged me into the prairie skirt. Because this is how she came into the activity. I'm not wearing that thing.
Yeah.
And I believe this is the way it should go today.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'll walk into a square dance club today in a square dance, a prairie skirt look, and I will get very discouraged looks from the older dancers. But I feel that I have to stand there and stand out and promote
right.
that this is okay to do, not tell them, but it's okay to wear this type of dress today.
Yeah. So, well, I asked Red and about the appeal of square dancing and so forth. What, do you have any magical solution for our dropout problem, Cliff?
Well, just in my own area, what I'm trying to do is both the clubs that I teach two beginner classes on two nights a week. My clubs, my entry-level clubs are mainstream clubs. I keep them mainstream. They're in the minority. And what I do in the summertime is I run a Monday and Tuesday night dance for my for the new dancers that we teach, and that's at mainstream, and we kind of, and we're pretty successful at holding our dancers once we get them in there. We don't beat them over the head in the summertime. We'll keep them, they say, the level mainstream,
yeah,
a little bit lower, but that seems to be working. On a whole, I'm concerned about the levels of talking about plus everything. In some areas, there's just plus dancing. There is no mainstream programs.
Right. That's very true.
I think the entry levels, if the dancers can graduate in mainstream and stay in your club dancing mainstream,
mm-hmm,
and not be forced up into the plus level.
Right.
In some areas, they're looked at as beginners, even as mainstream dancers.
True.
If you can hold them in mainstream, which we've been able to do with two clubs, they're not big, but they're doing as well as anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And just keeping it so they can dance.
Right.
I think the level climbing for new people, in other words, they had to dance plus right out of class.
Yeah.
It's been a problem.
Right.
For me, it's my opinion on that.
Good. No, that's great. And your experience in dancing, calling like once a month for the public as you do, do you find any people coming into the club activity as a result of that?
I haven't really found that.
Mm-hmm.
What we've gained in our town is respect that we exist. The more that people can see, we do floats and we do news articles. We do schools, and people now realize that there is a square dance club, and they realize that maybe this is fun.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe down the line, working with these children,
right,
where they're not totally turned off, mm-hmm, and they're enjoying square dancing, maybe they'll be part of the activity someday. We can only hope that,
right,
what we're doing will contribute to a growth factor in, right, the years to come.
Well, that's a great philosophy. Hoping that you're going to draw them in this year or this week or what have you, but looking at
the whole picture of our movement.
Right.
Al Brundage said to me growing up, he said, Cliff, try to leave square dancing as good as you found it.
Mm-hmm. That's
I
great.
Can remember that.
Right. So, have you done a recording at all, Cliff?
Yeah, we did a few records.
Yeah.
We did but that's the record that really sold for us. We did This Land Is Your Land. I did that with Red.
Mm-hmm.
I was inspired to do that after working on the Housatonic River, actually the Hudson River, with Pete Seeger.
Yeah.
Pete Seeger, that was the scariest thing I ever did. Was we had a rehearsal. I got a picture in the book of that. We were rehearsing. We went on and we did This Land Is Your Land, and Pete played the banjo right next to me. He was there doing the harmony, and because Pete again was a legend to me, and
sure,
there he was. And it was an experience I'll never forget.
Right. So. Okay. Well, I think we just about. Let's see, I did ask, there it is, right. I'm looking at the picture of that, right. That's great. I asked Red about line dancing. Are you doing anything with line dancing in your programs?
I do basically some line dancing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a great line dance fan.
Okay.
I don't believe that line dancing is kill square dancing. I have been two line dance sessions, and basically what I see is a lot of single people and a lot of women. Mm-hmm. A lot of people put the demise on square dancing to line dancing, which I don't believe that's true. I think there's a lot of singles that don't have partners. The wives like to go out, mostly women, mm-hmm. and they can't get their husbands, or they don't have husbands, so they go line dancing, and I'll go there and there's 30 women and two men.
Right.
So they're line dancing. I use line dancing in my one-night stands, but I use the very, very simple things that people can pick up in 10 minutes. Again, line dancing has got as complex as some of the square dancing,
sure.
which is starting to drive people out of line dancing.
Right.
It's got to be easy, fun, and easily taught, and taught quickly.
Yeah. Doing anything with round dancing at all?
No, I do more of things like the Macarena, the electric slide, mm-hmm. some of those new, the Hora, Tarantello. We use some international dances in our programs.
Good.
And the children's things, the Hokey Pokey,
yeah.
the Shoemaker, some things yeah. that children can do in school.
The Bunny Hop.
Yeah.
Well, that's really great. Before we get away, I remember now, I've got a couple of records with me in my briefcase here. I wanted to have you play that you might be able to use in the future. But be it as it may. But this has been a very, very interesting conversation. I think you've given us a slightly different pitch to this whole thing, and I'm talking to these old-timers around the country that are strictly into the club style dancing, Western style, if you will, and you've certainly given us a completely different picture about where the future of square dancing lies, and I want to thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob, for your
okay.
time very much.
You bet. We'll be nice talking to you again.
You.